Welcome to the Daily Flow. Please welcome your host, John Coleman.
Today's question on the Daily Flow is, how do we balance UX with shipping fast and Scrum? It's a loaded question, really, because it's suggesting that we need to ship, that we need to build anything. Alan Gottesdiener has a book by the title Discover to Deliver, and it's a bit oversimplified, but I like the strapline because a lot of ideas should never be built. And you can use discovery to discover maybe more than 70% of your ideas that should never be built. You can run cheap experiments. How about this? You can actually talk to people. You might think that certain personas or proto-personas would use your product and that they're looking for these particular outcomes. But maybe you've got the wrong people. Maybe you've got the right people, but they're looking for something different. Maybe they're not willing to pay what we're looking to charge. It could be all sorts of things. How do we balance UX with shipping fast and Scrum? First of all, how does UX and Scrum work together? There's a workshop at Scrum.org, Professional Scrum at UX. It's a really good workshop. It's probably the best workshop that Scrum.org has, in my opinion. And the first thing we need to do is we need to get rid of family feud. The UXers have some assumptions about the non-UXers, and the non-UXers have some assumptions about the UXers. And most of these assumptions are wrong, primarily because the level of transparency between the UXers and non-UXers is quite low. I see a pattern of people working in some kind of UX center of excellence or some central UX team, and we're dividing up those people as though they're pizzas, 10% over there and 5% over here. And then that leads to the misperception by non-UXers that UX is UI. UX is not UI. UI is about the user interface. You can have a user experience without necessarily having a visual user interface. So the first thing we do in Scrum is we say, hang on a second, we need a UXer in each team. There's loads of UX work. As soon as we make the UX work visible in the product backlog, and we should make it visible in the product backlog, the non-UXers will realize how much work there is. And some sprints, we will do mostly discovery because we discover something that we're on the wrong track. So we need to pivot. We need to go back to the drawing board and do some new experiments to build up some evidence about what we should build next. In Scrum, every sprint, you have some increment. But at the sprint review, you'd be looking at the results of the experiments, maybe the results of interviews you've had, as well as looking at the increment itself. And there are three options for managing the product backlog with UX and Scrum. One of them is have separate backlogs, which I would say never do that. Never say never and all that. I did find an exception yesterday where there was a team working on the design studio for the whole company. So they were designing the tool where you grab little widgets. Here's this menu and here's that button and all that kind of stuff. And it was branded with the company's brand style guide and so on. And so that's something that they were dedicated for a while. But in almost all situations, you want all of the UX work to be in the product backlog. And within that, you've got two options, striped or blended. Striped essentially means that the whole backlog would be like a barcode of UX and non-UX work. So maybe we need to do a customer interview, or we need to do a wireframe. We need to do a low fidelity prototype. We need to do a high fidelity prototype. We need to do a Wizard of Oz experiment. We need to do a concierge experiment. We need to recruit some people that match the proto personas that we think might be using our product. These should all be in the product backlog. When the backlog is striped, it leads to a problem that you don't know what you're going to discover, but that's going to be the situation anyway. When you're trying to discover, you actually don't know who's going to be using this, and you don't know what they're looking for. So we need to be comfortable with not knowing stuff anyway. So striped for me is actually fine. What I like about Striped, this is my personal opinion, we get rid of this execution bias where we think everything needs to go from discovery to delivery, which is not true. Blended is the other option where you have product backlog items that are a bit bigger. You've got some discovery and then you've got some delivery, and you need really good capability in the team, almost telepathy within the team, so that we're not reviewing the designs like 10 times. It's almost like I say something, like to Vanessa, she just gets it, she turns it around, and it's perfect. It's even better than I would have thought of. Unless you have that kind of telepathy and skill level in the team, Blended is going to be difficult. But you could also do a mix and match between Blended and Striped, but you would have one product backlog. And we're going to be putting UX on the agenda for each of the events in the daily scrum. Does anybody want to come along to that customer interview today? And does anybody want to take notes? Because if I'm doing the interview, I want to be focused on the customer. So maybe a non-UXer is willing to do that. Is anybody willing here? And that's really nice, because a lot of non-UXers think, oh, I don't want to see the customer, I just want to put on my headphones and all that kind of. Not all non-UXers are like that, but a lot of them are. But what they realize as soon as they go along and they watch the customer interacting with the prototype, they realize, oh wow, I didn't know you were using the product like that. Yeah, dude, we're using it like that. So light bulbs go off really for the non-UXers. And the key message is that UXers will be coaching, teaching, mentoring willing non-UXers on the Scrum team, all things UX, because there is too much UX work to be done. And my personal opinion, the learning is going to be one way. The UXers will be teaching, coaching, mentoring. The non-UXers, all things UX. I don't really see it going the other way, because there's actually too much UX there. UX is never finished. So then in the daily scrum every day, like I mentioned, UX is on the agenda, if you like. For me, there's two questions at the daily scrum. This is my opinion. What do we need to work on together today? And that includes UX. And is there anything that we forgot about that we started, but we didn't finish it, and something's blocked or something like that? Sprint planning would be talking about, what do we need to discover this sprint? What increments do we need to deliver? And by the way, if you're trying to decide some items, how do you know whether you need to do any experiments? Well, if you've got loads of evidence, just build the bloody thing. But if you don't have evidence, maybe there is high value, but maybe we're not so comfortable with our ability to harvest that value. So maybe you need to do some experiments. And a lot of the time, even really confident people, I did this with 228 people at London University earlier this year. A lot of people really cocky about hybrid learning. What we meant by hybrid learning was people on Teams and Zoom and people face-to-face at the same time, that working, how well that would work. And people were talking, oh, we're going to use Metaverse and blah, blah, blah. And then when they did the interviews, they found out no one would want to use Metaverse. I knew that, but like, they learned humility. And that's what it's all about. Learning is the first citizen when you combine Scrum with UX. At the sprint review, we'd be looking at the results of the experiments, the results of the customer interviews, as well as looking at the increment. At the retrospective, we'd be talking about how can we be more effective as a team. The Scrum Master's game has to jump up as well, because she needs to understand more about UX, probably should be trained. I see a lot of people coming to my Scrum with UX workshops, mostly North American and Canadian people coming to that class with me. I've noticed what's happening is they send one person from the team. I'm thinking of doing something like the Mob Programming Crew does, maybe have a team price, because the whole team should come. You don't just learn this one person and then that person transfers that. No, you need to experience it. And we use the Lean UX Canvas. We go through the Lean UX Canvas, a very simple 8-box canvas. Box number one, what problem are we trying to solve? You can write it in free form text. You can use the elevator pitch from Jeffrey Moore. We like to use the business problem template because it's very clear and it's a bit less blah, 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 and all this jargon, blah, 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 that means nothing. Really clear. And also expresses what problems we're trying to solve, and how do we know that some goals aren't being achieved, and how do we measure success and so on. And then we look at, what are the business outcomes? What would change for the organization? How do we know that we solved that problem? Box three is, what product personas would we use? Product persona doesn't mean prototype of a persona. It's just a made up word, actually, for our best guess at who the persona might be. There's no point really in going into 6 months of high polish, high ceremony research into who the personas might be. If you have it, you can take it as an input and it might be very useful input. But really, the Scrum team collectively would take a view on what would be the best guesses in terms of who might be interacting with this. And then our best guess as to what outcomes they're looking for, the customers and the end user. Customers or someone who pays, and an end user is someone who uses. For example, there's a car downstairs. Magda owns the car. I'm a user and Magda's the customer. It's only box five out of eight that we start talking about solutions. So yesterday I was doing wireframing. We did crazy eights from Google Design Sprints, where you fold a letter page or an A4 page if you're in Europe page in half, and you fold it in half again, you fold it in half again, you fold it back out, and you've got eight squares, if you like, or eight rectangles. And every minute you do a new sketch. And it's really nice to just brainstorm some ideas. Your ideas get crazier as you go along. That's why they're called the crazy eights. The politically correct people call them the activates. And then you might do some wireframing, some prototyping. You might even do a service design. McDonald's restaurants, I believe, the people who got that going at the start, you can see that they were actually trying different designs for the restaurant on a tennis court. So check that out, The Founder, I believe it's on Netflix. Box six, after collecting all of those assumptions, what problem are we trying to solve? What organizational outcomes are we looking for? Who might we be targeting this at? What outcomes are they looking for? What solutions might we offer those? They have a lovely, simple template in box six. It's like clicking together Lego bricks. It's really very well done. Fair play to Josh and Jeff for putting this together in Lean UX. The third edition book is out, by the way, Lean UX. Box seven, you say, okay, what's the most risky of all these assumptions we have here? You might pick the riskiest hypothesis. And the hypothesis, by the way, click together the assumptions from boxes 1 through 5. They're all assumptions that need to be tested. And in box seven, we're saying, okay, which one of those is the most risky? And do you really want to wait till the end of the year to find out that it is a big risk and it's going to kill us? You probably want to tease that out earlier. So we do that. And the Lean UX Canvas box seven. Box eight, this is really where the penny drops for people. And I'm looking forward to this in the class tonight with some people, where you say, okay, what's the smallest effort to learn the next most important thing? And they think of wild ideas. What can you do in 30 minutes? 30 minutes. What can you do? And what can you do in a day? What can you do in a week? What can you do in half an hour? Take up the bloody phone. Talk to a customer. you're dreaming up all this stuff. Just talk to someone and find out, will they actually use this? And a lot of the time, you find they won't. I had a class last year with people from the Netherlands. It was hilarious. You should never do a proto persona, by the way, on someone you know. Anyway, they decided to do it on me. They said, okay, you're Irish. And they said, I'm cranky, because I'm cranky most of the time. And they made some assumptions about me. They had this persona and blah, blah, blah. And I had some exec MBA students as well last July. They did the same thing, that this proto persona, her name is Katarina. She does this and she does that. These are her needs and these are her wants. And this is her friction and blah, blah, blah. And then I said, did you recruit a Katarina? Did you actually pick up the phone and talk to someone like that? Really? So anyway, after the course, I said, gals, guys, do you mind interviewing me on Monday morning? It was a weekend class. Okay, they said, yeah, okay, let's do that. So they had a chat with me, and they assumed that I was a BMW driver, that I drive like crazy, that I break all the speed limits, that I have this little gadget over my visor for detecting the speed limits and the speed guns and all that from the cops and so on. I said, guys, I'm not like that. If you met me 15 years ago, I was like that. You drive faster than a BMW because you can. You got the power. It's got the brilliant machines. But now I drive a Land Rover. It takes 2 seconds from the time I hit the pedal before the thing bloody moves. I was saying to Magda last week, she's saying, you should have moved there. Magda, this is a Land Rover. It's a little bit slower. Make allowances here. And also, there's cameras in the UK. I used to live in Ireland and used to get away with lots of things, but you just go and get fined. You could drive on the road. You get 5 fines within 2 miles and you're done. So I don't drive that anymore. The cameras have changed my behavior. So their assumptions were all wrong about the persona. And then they discovered that it would never have bought the product. So they were thinking of build something for someone who would never buy this thing. So the Lean UX Canvas is lovely. And where do you review that? You review it in Product Backlog Refinement. Product Backlog Refinement becomes the nerve center in Scrum. It's an activity. Good Scrum teams would actually have it almost as an event. In multi-team Scrum, it is an event. Nexus and Ness, it's an event. You have to do it. It'd be chaos if you didn't. And so within Product Backlog Refinement, you look at the Lean UX Canvas. You say, okay, we interview these people. When I had students earlier in the year going through a canvas for 4 days, they went through it the first time. They found out their assumptions were wrong when they interview people. We need to go back to the solutions. Other teams had to go back to the personas. Some teams had to go back to the business problem statement. They did the wrong business problem statement. That's the thing. It's iterative. You keep going back. You're never done. You're learning all the time. Learning is the first citizen. Then you got enough evidence. You should build this thing. Build it. And for me, combining Scrum with UX deals with the fundamental flaw of the Lean Startup. With the Lean Startup, give Eric Ries some credit. He said, what is quality if you don't know who the customer is? Fair point. Genius comment, actually. But when I was at a Lean Startup conference in 2013, streamed into London from San Francisco, there was some company rented a room, 30 people in the room, and I looked around and we were chatting and all that kind of stuff. And I said, look me in the eye and tell me that when you validated your assumptions, that it was the right product, you had the right personas, you had the right outcomes, you had the right solutions, they would pay for it. Look me straight in the eye and tell me that you turned on the quality switch. Because in Lean Startup, you deliver crap. Because what's the point in delivering good stuff when you don't even know who the customer is? With Lean UX and Scrum, when you get those experiments converted into evidence, and then Scrum has this definition of done, and that's your quality stamp right there. It's genius. The combination is beautiful. And actually, if you ask me, you also need to combine it with Kanban. Some people just do Kanban with UX, actually. What I like about Scrum is at the end of a sprint, you do look at what stuff is finished. Kanban looks at stuff that is maybe gone over a boundary, if you like. Well, there's no boundary, if you like, from one time horizon to the next. How do I balance it? I don't want to ship fast necessarily. I want to discover fast, and I want to deliver fast. I want to deliver what we discovered is maybe the right thing to build. Let's go back to Russell Ackoff, that famous consultant who taught at a number of universities in the United States. I would love to have been in his class while he was teaching. It must have been such a privilege to the people who were taught by him, because he was like a storyteller. You'd listen to the guy all day. He had the statement, I'll say it twice, the writer you do the wrong thing, the wronger you become. I'll say it another way. The more right you do the wrong thing, the more wrong you become. So do you just want to be a feature factory delivering sausages that are completely wrong, delivering stuff and shoving out to the market completely wrong? Or do you want to be figuring out what the right thing is to do? So if you're doing the wrong thing, you're kind of screwed. If you're doing the right thing and you're doing a bit wrong, you can use these retrospectives to correct your team effectiveness, and you can use the sprint reviews and Scrum to course correct in terms of what we should pivot next. So you have to make decisions. Do we persevere, which is what most people do, they're going to execution bias, or should we pivot, which is the smarter thing. Scrum at UX, I need to find a new metaphor because what's going on in Ukraine at the moment, but it's like a heat-seeking missile. It's looking for the value. Right, it's like, where's the value? Where's it? What's that over here? It's over there. Where's the value? But it's really, really cool. And I hope you check it out. So that's the Daily Flow. That's the question for today. I've got loads of other questions coming in. If you want me to deal with any question on your mind, just comment on whichever channel you're looking, whether it's on Instagram or Twitter or YouTube, wherever you're watching this. Be delighted to get your questions and answer them.